It is Thursday morning, one day away from the holiday weekend. I hope you mowed yesterday, Mr. Morey. I hope you mowed.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
You didn't mow yesterday. You better mow today because you ain't mowing until next Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the weather forecast after today, you're socked in until Thursday of next week, or Wednesday, I guess you could say, of next week. But by the time it dries out, you got a week.
Your next mow will be in June.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting really close to that next mow being in June. But again, as you know, as we get older, we always say we need the rain. And so in 2 weeks from now, when it's hot and humid and it's never raining, we're going to be like, man, I wish we could have some rain. And so you got the opportunity to get it in and taken care of. Take care of that lawn today, because after that, forget about it. Rain.
Forget
about it. The
entire
weekend.
Get about it. Whew. You guys get enough sleep last night?
I did not, and I'm pissed about it. I'll be honest with you. If I'm going to stay up late, you better win the damn game, okay?
Oh, boy.
I mean, what a colossal choke job last night by them. But this is this has been the Pacers' MO in the playoffs. They fall behind. They get behind big. They fall behind with 30 seconds left, and they win every game.
I mean,
it's kind of what they do. And, like, if you thought this thing was over with, you know, a minute and a half to go and up 14, you were sorely mistaken last night. And it was a beautiful game. And I mean, you know, Ben Maller texted me last night the greatest line that I can use: great theater. There was great theater last night for sports. If you are a sports fan, again, you don't have to be an NBA fan, because I am not an NBA fan, but that was great theater last night, man. What, you couldn't have asked for a better sporting event.
Not very many moments in my later adult life do I legit shoot out of bed. Watching that, relaxed, windows open, cool, brisk night, you know, fans are on, starting to kind of get down low into the night. Boom, that shot hits, goes 50 feet in the air, comes right back down, choke signal. But wait, was it a three? It was not. It was a two. I mean, what an absolute insane, insane fourth quarter that was.
It was wild, and you're right about the popping up out of bed moments, because I had a couple of those yesterday during that game. The way that thing started, by the way, that was a track meet at the beginning. Oh. That was wildly entertaining in the first quarter of that game, right? We don't even need to do the Western Conference Finals. Nobody cares about that turd fest compared to what we saw last night. I mean, both teams came out. Nobody was missing shots. It was an unbelievable display in the first quarter, and it was back and forth and back and forth. You're like, wow. And there was a lot of those wow moments during the first quarter, during the first half, during, you know, the entire game last night. And when he hit that shot and did the choke signal, I was like, uh-oh, a little premature on that, trying to do Reggie Miller to Reggie Miller at that point in time. You got to make sure you hit that shot and go ahead and win. But, I mean, at that point in time, you knew, and I felt anyway, the Knicks are going to overtime. They're not going to win this game. And you get that shot to go in like Halliburton did. It bounced up at the top of the roof, comes back down, goes in. I'm like, damn, man. I guess the basketball gods are in favor of Indiana for this one. And the call by Kevin Harlan, how quiet the Garden got. Would imagine if you were sitting as high as Chuck and the boys were last night, which, by the way, did they hang that booth from the roof last night? Like, I mean, could you have gotten any higher? They were like legitimately, we're in the building. We didn't say we were hanging from a platform that was attached to the roof.
We've got drones holding us up right now.
There's a lot of weight up there,
I mean,
Shaq, Chuck, Draymond.
I mean, my God, I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, this thing's going to collapse. I mean, it was like you hung onto the roof with, like, I don't know what, like cables or something. Like, how did they get these guys up on this thing?
It's actually what the ball hit when it went up.
Yeah, but that's what it did. Like, Shaq tried to wave at the ball as it kind of went up there. But, I mean, it was incredible. It was unbelievable to watch that game last night and be totally thrilled with, like, a performance of just sport, man. Like, that's just, like, that's why we love sports, because you watch games like that have just action from start to finish, twists and turns, plots, subplots, everything. And then he hits that shot, the Garden goes silent, and those guys up top heard Kevin Harlan's call. How quiet that building got last night.
That shot made it, according to NBA Central, NBA teams were 0-970 in the playoffs over the last 27 years when trailing by 14 or more points with under 250 left in regulation. Last night, made it 1 in 970.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Remarkable. No, it is unreal, and that's not a hyperbolic term to use at all for what that game was last night. We like to say, "Oh, that's unreal. That's unreal. That's unreal." But I mean, like that was unreal. That never happened before. Like since 1998, I think is the year that dates back to, and it's wild, man. It's crazy to see something like that happen. And I was thinking about this last night. Give me like the Chiefs losing in the Super Bowl the way that they did, 24-0 at halftime. You knew it was over. You could kind of go about your day. I lost 2 hours of sleep waiting for that game to be over last night, thinking the team I'm rooting for is going to win, and they didn't. And that's worse than losing and getting your ass kicked in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Losing like that sucks, man. Getting your ass kicked, yeah, you can kind of prepare for it, just like, you know, who Oklahoma City beat the other night or however that game played out. You got your ass kicked, move along, and figure out what goes on in game two. Last night, man, boy, that is a drainer, man.
I hope Joel Embiid wasn't watching that game, because that probably gave him flashbacks to when Kawhi hit that bouncer that went in. That was, what, game six?
It was to win the series, so it was
Eastern
either game
Conference
six
finals
or game
too,
seven.
Wasn't it?
No, it was the semifinals. Yeah, okay. Embiid's never made an Eastern
He's
Conference
never made
finals.
An Eastern Conference finals.
Never made
no,
an
trust
ECF,
the process, baby. Yes, exactly. Trust that dang process.
Yeah, the Knicks had a 99.7% chance to win that game.
But they didn't have a 100% chance to win that game. No. I mean, it's the 13-second game. We've seen some remarkable stuff, and I mean, that's kind of the 13-second. I still think the 13-second game is more remarkable than that one, because it's 13 seconds, and it's football, and it's crazy, and it's wild, and all that kind of stuff, and it's hard to do. That was a minute and 35 seconds that, you know, they had left on the clock. A couple of 3-point shots. That Naismith guy,
Aaron
man,
Naismith,
that
man.
That guy is draining 3-point shots and stealing the heart from Knicks fans, just like the real Naismith stole basketball from Lambert Will and claimed it as his own. I mean, so that Naismith guy, man, 6 for 6 or whatever it was in the fourth quarter last night. I mean, everybody's going to talk about that Halliburton shot, but that guy was on fire. I don't know that I've seen anybody more efficient at their job in sports this side of Patrick Mahomes like that guy was in the fourth quarter last night. That guy's still draining shots.
I think he was 4 for 4, and the Pacers were 6 for 6 when it was just.
Is that what it was? He was four for four?
I know he hit 5 straight.
I thought he was 6 for 6 at one point.
He was 8 for 9 on the night.
Yeah.
He hit 5 straight in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
The team hit 6 straight threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
just
unbelievable.
He was wild, man. It was crazy.
I've never seen Curry like came into his body. It was very weird.
Better than that, maybe. I mean, it was like he was hitting from all over the floor, fadeaways, falling down, shooting out of the rafters. Like, it didn't matter where he shot it from on the floor. That thing was going in. I mean, I've never seen somebody that unconscious before, just banging down shot after shot after shot after shot like that. And even with guys in his face.
And then Brunson had some slippery fingers in the end.
He did.
He was turning the ball over a couple times. And they got lucky with the Josh Hart play. The inbounds, he tried to give him the lead.
Very lucky. Hart slipped. I mean, my goodness, right? You thought you saved the game on a play like that, but nope, did not.
Looks like the lights got a little bright in the Garden for the guys that host the Garden.
Yeah, they did.
Well, and I mean,
but give me 6 more of those.
Oh, please,
I'll take 6 more.
Please.
You can go ahead and get this other one over with, but 6 more of those, and I'm good.
And that's what the people want, man. Yes. It's TNT. We have drama, right? And they do. I mean, this is a dramatically filled series. But I think last night, and I'll just go on record and say it right now, the series is over. The Knicks aren't going to win this thing. That's a gut punch. Just like I kind of thought with Boston, you know, you blow a 20-point lead twice. It's going to be very tough to come back. That's a psyche, you know, mind F right there. You blow a game like that. That's not a physical thing. That becomes a mental thing. And then you hear them after the game, which is some of the dumbest stuff that I've ever heard an athlete say. Well, we let up on the gas. How could you let up on the gas when you just finished a series where you were down 20 in 2 consecutive games and came back and won? Like, how stupid are you? And I'm being serious about that. You are a stupid moron if you gave up in that game last night and took the foot off the pedal after playing a series prior where you were down 20 in 2 games on the road and came back and won, and then you're up 14 with a minute and a half to go. You're like, yeah, we kind of took our foot off the gas a little bit last night. How ignorant are you? Like, you are a complete fool to play that style of sports, man. The minute you give a professional athlete a little bit of a leeway to go out there and dominate and they take advantage of it, they're not going to stop. The Knicks are dumb. They deserve to lose that series for letting off the gas, especially after having that experience a week ago.
Game 2 Friday night.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Game 2 Friday night at 7. So can't wait for that.
Nice.
Bob sent us a debate yesterday, and you guys are all on the same side except for me and Jen.
Yeah, I think it's you and Jen versus me and Mac on this one, and I'd like to know where the audience stands on this. And so we were talking last night. I said, oh, I forgot to pack a pair of underwear for the gym or whatever, you know? And she goes, okay, right? And I go, yeah, I usually just take the pair that I wore the day before, throw it in the gym bag, work out in it, and done, and not waste a pair of underwear. And my wife thought that was the most disgusting thing ever. I'm like, these are normal, like, everyday underwear that I just wear. I didn't sweat in them. They were just around the house or at work or something like that. In order to save a pair of drawers, I throw that pair into the gym bag. The next day, I work out in that pair, putting on a clean pair the next morning, and then putting them on when I'm done with the gym. And she's like, that is the most disgusting thing that I've ever heard. And Max's like, I don't think so. And he's on my side. What the hell's it matter what kind of underwear you work out in?
I think this is efficient. I think it's great. You just sat around and some...
Well, you didn't just sit around. You probably dropped a few guts. Probably let some air out. There's some fecal matter getting dropped in those things. And now you're going to work out in the gym with them, sit on the gym, the gym workout stuff.
I do
sweat.
Have a pair of shorts over the top of them.
They still leak, man.
No.
Yeah, you gotta get those out of there.
No, they really don't. So I'd like to know the text line.
I don't think Bob has fecal matter on his shorts.
I'm not five, right?
No, but you're passing gas. You think it just comes out with roses and petals?
Yeah,
no,
mine
you're,
does.
You're getting some fink.
I know the dog likes the way it smells, so I mean...
if that's your support, that rests my case.
What the hell was that? I do use dude wipes, so I mean, everything is
the
everything
dog is
clean.
Named after Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, that is
so
true. Yeah,
you know?
It is, yeah. So, I mean, Mac, you're on my side on this one,
100%,
right?
100%, man. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you don't work out, you don't sweat, you're just sitting in a pair of underwear for a few hours.
Right.
Yeah, what it didn't get dirty.
Exactly. No, you use
it
the next day. It's a waste of underwear, right?
And what did we say one of our least favorite daily chores are laundry.
Yeah, nobody wants to do the laundry, but so you double it up, you use it for a day, then you work out in it, and it's completed its task. You got good use out of that pair of drawers.
Smash.
From the 816, yeah, that's disgusting. From the 816, of all people, I wouldn't have had you doing that, Bob. From the 816, you're usually very picky about stuff like that. From the 913, Bob, I'm with Jen and Dustman on this one.
Wow.
From the 816, Bob, you are freaking disgusting.
Wow.
And then from the 816, Ree Finkel had a clean pair of shorts. What do you know about Ree Finkel? Soccer-style kicker, one hell of a Merrill Brown American, and one nickname was the Mule. Coming up on the other side, you can no longer distrust manager Cotrero because he got it right yesterday. He told you something was going to happen, and we have the audio to prove it. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
Whoever that bozo was doing the armpit fart thing, come on, man.
Catch Royals insider Josh Fournier every Monday at 8:20, right here on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Hit pretty well to right field. Yastrzemski going back, looking up, and that ball is out of here. It's an opposite field two-run homer for Salvador Perez, and the Royals lead it 6-1. That's his third homer on the year. 397 feet to the opposite field, and the Royals up by 5.
I guess you could chalk that one up as something you love to see. About time. Feels good to see Salvador Perez do that. Of course, yesterday we had Matt Cotrero on the show asking him about Salvi and basically gave us notion that we should have all placed a bet on any time home run for Salvador Perez.
We do have those conversations, but he's in a good spot mentally, and I would bet on him breaking out.
So thank you, Q.
There it is, right?
Thank you, Bob and Dusty, for advocating for him to take a day off. Sometimes reverse psychology works, but I thought yesterday's win against the Giants was kind of a very big statement win for the Royals. You had your backs against the wall with the bullpen game. You were going to throw Lynch for hopefully two. You were going to keep continuing to go down the line of relief pitcher, relief pitcher, relief pitcher, and hope that you had a chance that by the time, and I heard Cotrero say this on the Royals pregame show, that he wanted to hopefully have a chance to get to his big guns when the game mattered most. Luckily, your offense came out, and from the jump, we're alive, we're hitting the ball. And, you know, we joked yesterday, do your work against a guy with one eye, Boy, did the Royals offense show up yesterday at a time in need when you really needed that offense to show up.
It was huge yesterday. And scoring eight runs, I mean, that's moving mountains today in Major League Baseball, not just for the Royals, but for everybody. I mean, runs have been at a premium this year. And so I thought that was great. But, you know, the Salvi stuff yesterday, he started the day swinging and missing and striking out, right, yesterday. And it was three straight singles, I think. And then, as you said, three straight strikeouts for the Royals.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they only got one run early, and you're thinking, all right, here we go again. And mm-hmm. Salvi had another strikeout. And I think, like, the conversation surrounding Salvador Perez is one that's, I think, very interesting for a lot of people, because, as we know, Carrington and Rob have been writing him off since 2015. I think they've been saying that he's been kind of washed on that one. And a lot of people are kind of getting to that point. My buddy Jim, who keeps texting me about Salvi, he's like, it's not just this year. He's gone back the last 100 games. So basically, you know, half of last season, the postseason, and this year. And he goes, the numbers just haven't been there. Move him down in the lineup. And we talk about this. And I was thinking a lot about Salvi yesterday, especially after that first strikeout, because I think Salvi and the way that we view Salvador Perez is different than any other athlete in Kansas City, because he represents more than just himself. He represents the beginning of this golden era that we're in Kansas City sports right now. And I do believe that golden era started in 2014. And we're currently in the middle of it with the way that the Chiefs and Royals and even the current right now are doing their thing, right? And Salvi's that guy who's connected to the past, but he's also the guy that's here in the future and kind of ties all this thing in together. He was also the first guy of this golden age of sports to believe in Kansas City and to take that contract offer early from the Kansas City Royals and become that guy that we've all been looking forward to sign that contract in Kansas City, stay here while Beltran and Dye and Damon and Tony Gonzalez and all these guys that we've loved over the years, you know, walked out the door. Salvi was kind of that first guy, those young guys, to stay here in Kansas City. He was the first one that's been called up. He's seen it all. And his decline means more than just, oh, Salvi's at 35, he's declining. It means we're starting to get out of that original era of what we're seeing here and how he was a pioneer in Kansas City sports. And really, guys, the first athlete to make Kansas City cool. And so Salvi was kind of the pioneer in all of this, kind of laid the groundwork as that first athlete to where we are now. Put the Royals on the map. He embraced Kansas City. We embraced him back. It became this love affair. And so watching him struggle, I think, is more than just a random athlete going out there and struggling. We're seeing our first true sports hero of this generation kind of fade away and kind of get to the end of the line. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm having a tough time dealing with Salvi getting to that point because I'm not ready for Salvi. And so seeing him be big yesterday, that was fantastic. That was great.
Yeah, a lot of that, most of that I agree with. I think there are different, obviously different sports, different people for different reasons that are who they are. I think there are a lot of parallels of Salvador Perez and Travis Kelce. Obviously Salvador Perez is, you know, the face or, you know, of the Royals franchise. Obviously Mahomes is the face of the Chiefs franchise because of the position he plays, which is quarterback. But I would say that with Travis Kelce, he was here with the Alex Smith. He was drafted. Yeah. He kind of bloomed into this personality even before the Chiefs got really, you know, to the top of the mountain, whereas Salvador Perez was the guy as well. He was here. He was laughable. He was part of that 13, 14, 15, 16 seasons with all those, you know, celebrities of Kansas City. And now he's here again, riding it out. And a lot of people are having a hard time understanding that time waits for nobody.
Nobody.
Right. And Salvador Perez is still efficient. He had a great game yesterday. I'm not ready to jump all in and say he's back, but to go 3-for-5, 7 total bases yesterday's game and have 2 RBIs and one of those be an opposite field home run, that's something where even a guy that's a veteran in Salvador Perez can have those games. You'd like to see a little bit more of them. I don't need to see that, you know, every other series or every series, you know, once a night. But that, I think, is what you're going to need Salvador Perez to do in a situation like that. Be the captain, be the leader, drive in runs, because you're in a game where you don't have one of your most efficient pitchers, right? Minnesota gets a hell of a slate with the Kansas City Royals this weekend with who's pitching for them, because it's Noah Cameron, who's been lights out in 2 starts. We'll see if he can do it again. Chris Bubich, who's early onset, could be starting the All-Star game for the American League, could be a Cy Young candidate, probably should be a Cy Young candidate. And then you have Michael Wacha, who's ERA sub-3.
Yep.
So yesterday was a game in which you needed to lean on your captain. But we can all agree that, we've heard Vern say this, you don't need a 35-year-old catcher hitting 4th in your lineup and hoping to have him be that guy. We go back to Max's take and maybe a little bit of mine. what we're going to see this football season. We shouldn't need a 35-year-old tight end to be the focus of the offense every single week. Will there be those games where you're playing a dynamite secondary? Maybe it's Denver, and you need Travis Kelce to have one of those every once in a while. You know, 8 catches, 85 yards and touchdown. Sure. But am I okay as long as Sal's hitting 250, hits about 15 to 20 home runs, knocks in 70 to 80? That's fine.
That's a hell of a year.
For a 35-year-old catcher, you better believe it. Do I need Travis Kelce to have 1,090 catches and 12 touchdowns? No. I need him to just be the leader of the team on offense, be the captain, per se, for the Chiefs. And I think you're going to see a lot of similarities in the fan base when it comes to these two guys at this point in their career. Personalities are kind of the same. Leadership qualities are kind of the same. Roots, origins of Kansas City, they've never played anywhere else, kind of the same. But we're also seeing the decline, which is okay because that's what careers are. That's what sports do to us. And I think what we saw yesterday in Salvador Perez was, you know, maybe a shot at me, maybe a shot at you, like, fellas, I'm not that done yet. I'm just not what I used to be, and it might be a tough reality. Whereas later on in this regular season, we might see Travis Kelce be like, hey, I'm not washed. I just ain't 31-year-old Travis. I'm 35-year-old Travis.
Well, and also, too, you know, Travis obviously has saved it for the postseason for the last couple of years, and that's been outstanding, and that's really what matters most. Maybe Salvi's on that gravy train as well. You know what? Just get through the regular season, do my thing, mm-hmm. and then when the postseason gets here. Now, I think it's harder to do that in baseball than it is in football because baseball is all about timing, and you've got to get all that kind of nonsense down and, you know, the 64 baseball excuses that Swanee gave us one day. But I will say that as I look at what he did yesterday, it was good because it was against a good team as well. I mean, we can talk about the one-eyed pitcher. His ERA is 2.67. I mean,
and
that's after giving up 3 runs yesterday. So he came into that game with a mid-2 ERA.
And he's got a winning record, correct?
He's 5-4 now. Yeah. So he was 5-3. Yeah. He's a good pitcher. No, the point of the story
and
is
that's a good team.
It's a good team. It's a good pitcher. Salvi did it against the good side of things. He didn't do it against the Rockies, right? He did it against a real baseball team. He did it against a legitimate organization out there yesterday. And I think that's what matters most. And I think you're right with the Travis Kelce comparison because he was the first Chief to really make Kansas City cool. Salvi was the first Royal to make Kansas City cool.
Of these eras, of right?
Yeah. We're not going back to, like, but
well, Salvi Jackson was pretty cool, Bob.
I know. Salvi's the best player that came along since George Brett. There's no question about it. He's the second best Royal of all time at this point, right?
No argument. And
he's going to go into the Hall of Fame and all of this kind of stuff. And again, I think it's important because Salvi came along in a time where I still think there's a lot of shell-shocked fans out there not quite sure how to adjust to this winning as we see on the text line from time to time. But I think Salvi was that first guy that came along and said, hey, Kansas City's a pretty cool place and kind of, you know, gave us the opportunity to see an athlete want to be here and stay here as opposed to a guy like Tony Gonzalez who a couple years prior walked out the door and said, we're never going to win here in Kansas City. And he wasn't wrong with that organization the way it was at that time. He wasn't here with Andy Reid, obviously. He was here at the beginnings of Todd Haley and Scott Pioli and saw the writing on the wall real fast and bailed. Mm-hmm. And then we got mad at him because he told us the truth of what was going on here in Kansas City. But Salvi was that first guy who committed to us. And that came at a time when we needed somebody to commit to us. And we needed somebody to show us that the Royals were moving in the right direction. And I'll never forget, we were doing the show at that golf course, Firekeeper in Topeka, Kansas, the night Salvador Perez was called up. Like, how many of these stories do you remember where you were when so-and-so was called up? And I remember sitting in the hotel room in Topeka at the casino watching that debut against the Tampa Bay Rays going, damn, this guy may be pretty good. He had a great debut that day. And Salvi's been everything that we've asked for as an athlete. And that's why I'm not ready to quote-unquote write him off or say that he's washed. This guy deserves the benefit of the doubt right now from all of us. And he's the type of guy, after we saw what he did yesterday, let's rally around Salvador Perez and you know, give him that hero's welcome that he deserves because we're better when he's better. And I don't think it does any good sitting here saying this guy has done this, that, or the other. We can see what's going on, and it should for you personally when you're watching these games more and more just kind of enjoy what you're seeing with Salvador Perez because the end is a lot closer than the beginning was, and we know what all the years were in between. We're getting towards that end, so start enjoying Salvador Perez. But I'm not ready to say it's time to, you know, cast him off and, you know, send him to the moon or anything like that.
Right.
Beautiful
and
planet.
I think, again, like, I think that's just the conversation because I think there are at times in life with sports, there are those tough conversations to be had. And it's just one of those things where I still firmly believe that Salvador Perez should hit 5th or 6th in this lineup. And I think Michael Garcia should lead off.
That was a great move yesterday by having Garcia lead off. He does a great job at that spot.
Because started the game off with a hit, next at bat, base hit. And I just think that in that game, and I want to say that I heard Vern say that Garcia has hit over 400 in the leadoff position, and the Royals are now 5-1 with him hitting leadoff. Coincidence? I think not. He's your hottest hitter in your lineup, and then you get to put your best player and the third best player in baseball with a chance to set the tone. Then you go Vinny. Then at four, I don't know where you go there. Maybe that's where India hits because he's on base, but at least he can get on. He can keep it going. It won't be a double play more often than not. And then Salvi go five. And then six, you know, you can. And that's what's great about this team.
He's hitting 478 is Mikel Garcia when leading off.
Yeah, and that's a number you can't ignore.
No, you can't. Doubles in the leadoff position, 11 hits. I mean,
he's on second.
He's well, it's funny. His batting average is 478. His on base is 480. So he's only drawing one walk out of that. But even still, I mean, right. you're getting on base half the time that you're in that leadoff spot. I do think, and I know there will be some baseball ease and some nonsensical reason they'll give us, but why not just make Mikel Garcia your leadoff hitter until he's not anymore? Your numbers are there, and he's getting the job done.
Right, and I think that when you look at the possibilities of him at the leadoff hitter, it's obviously not affected him in any way, shape, or form this year because you're almost to the point of having a conversation of, do you lock up Mikel Garcia for the future? Mm-hmm. Not an expensive player.
No.
Seems like the perfect type of guy the Royals would keep in their system. He's proving to you that his bat has been there because we're almost to June and he hasn't skipped a beat.
Right.
I don't know if that conversation happens yet. I think that you wait until the end of July to see if he's still kind of being that productive guy. But I do think, I really do believe that that is your leadoff hitter. Stop playing games with that lineup there. One, two, three. Garcia,
but see, this
Bobby.
This is where I got to tell you, at 37 years old, you're sounding like the old guy in the room because I'm with you 100% on this. Give me a set lineup and let's go. But for whatever reason, Dusty, I don't know the answer to this. Baseball doesn't want to do that anymore. They want to jumble these lineups all the time instead of just like back in the day, it used to be, I want to know that I'm hitting third. Oh, my God, I'm hitting fourth. I'm not going to be able to do that. Now it's for whatever reason it's completely changed. There may be some good in that, but I'm with you, man. We got a set lineup. We got this guy that's hitting 500 in the leadoff position. Why aren't we doing that every day? I don't care what anything else tells you. Right. This guy's good in the leadoff spot. You're right.
Because I think that if you put him at the leadoff spot, and then the other spots that I wouldn't mess with is I wouldn't mess with your 8-9. I kind of love what Waters and Kyle Isbell are doing at the bottom of that lineup.
I say it every day. We don't talk about Kyle Isbell enough. Again, yesterday with a great play out there in center field. I mean, like,
I don't know if he saved the game, but that could have been
at that point in time.
That's a big momentum shift.
Yeah.
You talk about the Halliburton three. He makes that diving catch. Everybody in that stadium was like,
it's
was
over. A moment. That takes the air out of your sails.
For sure. It was a huge play.
Yeah, Garcia hasn't even hit arbitration yet. He's got his first arbitration after this season, and he's got two more after that. He's not a free agent until 29. So there is no rush to pay him whatsoever. Now, if you want to do a nice thing and thumb him off a couple of bucks, can do something like that, then absolutely, yeah.
Because with Garcia, if he can continue, I'm not saying every year he's going to hit 330, but if he can show consistency, be a leadoff hitter, you would then essentially have your third baseman set up for the future, your shortstop set up for the future, your first base set up for the future, and that's the cornerstone of your infield.
Why not your center fielder set up for the future?
I mean, yeah.
I mean Isbell's going to be that guy that we're always looking to replace, but at the end of the day, you realize he's just a damn good baseball player. Yeah. Nothing sexy about it, nothing flashy about it. But by God, the guy gets the job done every single time.
Right.
And I think a lot of time in sports, not just us, but I'm talking teams too, they overlook those guys. They spend so much time maybe trying to replace that guy and find somebody better than that guy that they overlook that guy. Mikel Garcia may have been that guy early on in the season too.
Yeah, it's great to see that. And especially when you read those numbers where he's hitting well over 400, the team plays at a higher rate with him being lead off. Because again, they say the cliches in baseball, and they say them for a reason. The table setter, the guy that starts things off, base hit, Bobby, base hit, next guy, RBI. Unfortunately, strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. But throughout that day, Mikel Garcia's next time he came up, base hit, what did Bobby do? Double. So, I mean, it's just, you have to have those guys hitting there. And I know some people will say they want Mikel Garcia to hit third. I don't think he's that guy.
I don't. No, you got to have somebody get on base to give Bobby the opportunity to drive him.
And you have to have a little bit of pop. And Vinny's starting to come around a little bit better. That takes pressure off Sal. If he can drop to, you know, fifth or sixth and put India somewhere around there.
Or maybe you play Mark Canha out there as your starting left fielder. I mean, what's wrong with going Canha? What's wrong with going Isbell? What's wrong with Drew Waters right now?
There's nothing wrong with that.
In your outfield.
As long as you're winning.
As long as you're winning games, exactly. And they're doing just that. And maybe you go with a rotation of Massey and India right now at second base, a platoon, if you will, at that second base spot until both of those guys can kind of get this thing figured out. But the reason they got Jonathan India on this roster was to be that leadoff hitter, to be that table setter for Bobby Witt Jr., right? Sometimes you go into a season, into life, into a situation with a plan, and then you get into that situation, and all of a sudden you've got to deviate from that plan. And that's why I think Andy Reid is so good at what he does, because he's able to deviate, change, make adjustments, all that kind of stuff. A lot of coaches, a lot of managers get this tunnel vision where, well, this was the plan, and this is what we're going to do, and they don't want to deviate. We're starting to see a reason to deviate right now from that plan. But my original point was they went out and got Jonathan India to give Bobby the opportunity to drive in runs early in the game and to give yourself a 1-0 lead. Well, if Michael Garcia is getting on base at a 50% clip at the leadoff spot, which he is, why wouldn't you do the same thing there and keep him at the top of the lineup to then give Bobby somebody to drive in? Because if Garcia's getting on base every other time, that's a stolen base here and an RBI opportunity for Bobby right there. And you're up 1-0 half the time. I think you got to stick with it. I think your idea of keeping him up that leadoff spot is brilliant.
I think especially if you keep your top four locked. I think you could switch the lineup after that where you mix and match. But your top four guys, I think the way that can set the tone and get everything going, because you give this pitching staff a 2-0 lead before the third inning. I mean, I like my chances almost 8 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're going to have some days and all that sort of thing, but again, some reports I heard during pregame show yesterday with Matt Cotrera with Jake Eisenberg. Reagan's throwing off of a mound, but nothing serious, not using much of his legs. They're going to give him some time, really effective during this 15-day IL stint. And then, you know, you look at the standings, man, and it's annoying because what a great win yesterday. You win a series against the San Francisco 49ers, but Detroit keeps winning. So they're 33-17, which is just insane. But the Royals, 28-23, they're 5.5 back of the AL Central, so nothing to be concerned about. They have 28 wins on the season. That is third most in the AL. The Yankees got their 29th victory yesterday, the Tigers 33, and then the Royals and the Seattle Mariners both have 28 games won. So big series this weekend.
Huge series
this weekend. You go to Minnesota where good things, good to see Salvi do that, because you'll hear it on Vern's pregame show. I guarantee you it on Friday. You'll hear it on the Royals pregame show. Salvador Perez, he rakes at Target Field.
Yeah, they were already talking a little bit about it on the broadcast yesterday on the TV side. Like, it's good to see Salvi do this now, off day. And then you go into Minnesota for three. And look, those are big games against the Twins right now. That's a winning team. That's a team that's ahead of you or with you in the standings, however you want to look at it. You want to win these games. They're division games. So, you know, go take care of that business up in Minnesota. Don't get your teeth kicked in or anything like that. And then you come home, because it doesn't get much easier after that. Cincinnati's rolling into town, and then you have Detroit after that. And so it gets real serious real fast. And so really good to take care of the Giants yesterday. People can't sit there and say, oh, they're only winning games against the White Sox and the Rockies. They're not winning against good teams. They just took 2 out of 3 from a very good team in the National League West that probably would end up being a postseason team.
Coming up on the other side, we want to ask you, what would be your dream seat for a sporting event? Dream seat. Is it 50-yard line, 2 rows back, court side at the Garden? Is it Fenway, the up top? What is it? 913-586-7965. We'll dive into ours as well. But what would be your dream sporting event seat here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports?
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
Hey, what yo up, man?
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Right back at it here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan. Coming back with Power Man 4000. Them generic tunes, baby. We asked the question on the other side, if you could sit anywhere at any sporting event, what would be the dream seat?
I thought this last night watching LD sitting down there courtside next to the Indiana Pacers bench, and then at the beginning of the game, LD Larry David, for those who don't know, scoring at home, was sitting right there courtside. And before the game, like, I guess it was the Knicks social media team that was kind of walking around giving every celebrity in the place the some sort of ball to take a picture of, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a picture that Larry David took, and somebody had like a picture of him taking the picture, and it was a miserable look on his face, like, come on, what are we doing here? But nonetheless, this guy's sitting courtside, and at one point I thought he was going to take to look at Rick Carlisle and say, can you move, man, like an episode of Curb. I'm trying to watch the game and he's the coach of the Pacers, you're standing in my way. But I mean, that has to be the most coveted, iconic, greatest seat in sports, right? Courtside at the Garden for a big game like that. Is there anything better than that seat sitting on that court with that atmosphere?
Be pretty awesome.
Mac would tell you there's another garden that would be a pretty cool spot.
Got another garden I'd like to go to as well.
Is it as good though as Celebrity Row at Madison Square Garden?
No.
With that,
LA is the only other competition there, probably.
Yeah, but everybody gets there late. Like LD and all, they were there early.
Yeah.
Like they were waiting for that game to get started, right? They were there early in their seats and all that. If it was the Lakers, they'd be there at halftime, right? I think the Dodger Stadium, that's kind of a good look behind home plate there. You know, would kind of be fun. But I mean, you're hard pressed to find a better, more coveted seat in all of sports than sitting courtside at the Garden for a big game like that. Cause everybody's there. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
From the 816, I would like to sit in that one single seat upstairs at the K.
That's fantastic.
Cause everyone can envision what that seat is. That little tiny guy all the way up there.
All the way up there, the upper deck. I love that. The Knicks didn't even tweet the picture, by the way, of Larry David holding that ball last night. Yeah.
I saw he had an out-of-bounds play where he snagged it, though.
He still got it.
Still got it.
He's got it. Move it over there.
There's so many celebrities in the game. There was one side of him, and then there was another side.
You didn't even really see Spike Lee last night.
No, but I was keeping my eye on Chalamet. I was watching him about as much as I was watching the game. I know that sounds very weird and creepy.
No, that's me, though. That's what I do. You watch the crowd.
Because he was in, like, a bright pink shirt, and they were all on one side, and then the other side was... You know, everybody else like Stiller and Chalamet and all those guys sat next to each other. And then the other side was like Larry David and all those, Ben Stiller and those, maybe not Stiller. I think Stiller was on the other side, but I was watching Chalamet because I was like, okay, this is his seat. Because I'll watch Mahomes during a Dallas Mavericks game to see an athlete who we watch who can go in complete God mode, mm-hmm. or an actor who we watch who might be the best, you know, male performing actor of our current generation, and to see them be like me. I think that makes sense. Like watching Chalamet last night with a 12-point lead with a minute 20 left and not confident, I'm like, that guy's a Knicks fan. He's been here. Yeah. He's noticed. He's none of the, you know, obviously being young, but you know the history of being a Knicks fan. It's like when the Chiefs played that Colts game and they fell from – they had the lead. That whole game I'm watching, sitting in the chair going, I've been here before.
No, you could have felt that one slipping away.
Oh,
there was
yeah.
no question
and
about
that. And then the
that.
Titans yeah. game, I've been here before.
Right.
Pittsburgh game, I've been here before.
Been there before, yep.
So I guess for me – I mean, man, World Series behind home plate, Bronx would be sick.
That would
just
be crazy,
to see that
right?
stadium, yeah. that going that nuts because of the tradition that it is. I would love to sit.
I'd like to sit on the fence at Fenway. I'd love to sit on a Green Monster seat.
Yeah,
I don't
cool.
know how great a view of the game that it would, but I'm not there for the game at that point in time. I'm there for that experience,
yep,
right? And sometimes
exactly.
that's what sports is about. Is it's about the experience of doing something. Sitting on the fence at Fenway and the Green Monster, there's nothing else like that in sports. That would be wild.
Yeah, the two, speaking of green, I would love to be 18th Green Sunday Masters.
Yeah.
That because that just would be like historic.
Yes.
And then the
one
other
too.
One would be the 17th Green at TPC Waste Management in Scottsdale.
Oh, that one. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
I can let my inner frat boy come out of that.
Because
everybody just, you know, you get tossed. Because if I'm not having to pay for it, because those are expensive seats, but the Waste Management.
Call Dana. She can get you taken care of.
I'm good. But I will eventually fall into that on my own, hopefully. I don't want to get in that side of things. But yeah, that would be an awesome event, would be the. I believe it's 16th, 7th. I can't believe I keep forgetting this. But yeah, that the TPC Sawgrass at Waste Management, just somebody
TPC
aces
Sawgrass, isn't that the one that's down in Florida with the 17th hole?
Oh, Scottsdale, I mean. Yes, TPC Scottsdale.
Gotcha. Is that at the same course every year in Arizona, too?
Mm-hmm.
It is? Okay, I didn't
right
realize
during
that,
the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Same term every year, and everybody, if there's an ace, you know, throw the beers on the green. Yeah. Mac, you got a spot you'd sit?
I think you guys have mentioned him. I'm trying to think of like a
there's
football spot.
There's not many. There's
not a seat at a football game like that.
No, there really isn't, because I've sat in the front row at Arrowhead. Those seats are terrible.
Yeah, that's not good.
You can't see.
No.
You can't see. You got the cheerleaders and you got the players and you've got the coaches and you're at eye level with them. You cannot see what's going on on the field. So I'm trying to think of like a football comparison. I don't know that there is a seat like that at a football game.
Cage side, UFC fight, UFC
that'd be
fight
fun.
Night.
Yeah.
That'd be sick.
Big fight, yeah.
Rinkside, NHL,
for like a Tyson
Stanley Cup.
Fight or something.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Pegging on the glass.
Yeah, if you ever sat on the glass at a hockey game,
that would be awesome.
It's crazy. You know, it's fun. It's a different perspective when you can sit right there and see, you know, what that's like. But, you know, there aren't just many of those iconic, like, oh my God, seats that I got to have. That's why I think by far and away, sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden for a game like this, or if they advance to the NBA Finals.
Oh,
could you imagine a courtside seat during the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden? What that would be like? I mean, nuts.
From the 816, my dream seat is the Buck O'Neill Legacy seat, because that means I did something good for the Kansas City community.
I like that. That's a good one right there. Take the rest of the day, man.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Somebody says, from the 309, I want to sit in a penthouse balcony suite in Monaco for the F1 race.
Okay.
Chris in Illinois is
Heck
the one who said that.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good idea.
From the 816, dream seats, number one, Azteca for the first match of the 2026 World Cup. Number two, anywhere in Madison Square Garden for the Knicks when the Knicks win the finals. And then three, the yellow wall in Dortmund for the UCL match.
Okay.
They remind me of like the Steelers, like their colors, their fan base, like the iron workers. They get rowdy. You ever watch a Borussia Dortmund game?
I mean, yeah, it's been a minute.
BVB.
Yeah.
The Bees. Man, that's a fun one. Someone did say they want to sit on the 50-yard line, row one, for a Super Bowl in the Chiefs playing. I think you'd get there and be like,
You want to be about row 15. Like
you
want to be
the
up
player line.
Yeah, you do. You want to be above the player line. Front row at a football game is not a good spot.
I know it sounds like, I don't know, like arrogant maybe. I've sat in that seat before. You are so distracted from the game because everything on the side, and maybe it's a cool experience that you want to see, but the carts going by, the people running by, the trainers running
by, cameras,
the blue tent pops up, and you're like, the hell's going on?
No, it really is. Like, front row at Arrowhead is not a good seat at all, because I forgot about the camera being in your way too. The guy on the cart with the camera being right there. So it is, that's not a great seat. You want to be in row like 15 and higher at a football game, and you'll be great. That's a really good seat. 50-yard line, like row 15, that would be a premier seat to have.
913, ringside WrestleMania, sign me up.
Like all those people who sit in those suites in Dallas, you know, that are on the field level, or Giant Stadium, they got the suites on field level. You can't see the game.
Yeah, that sucks.
I'm paying a lot of money. I want to be able to watch the damn game, not on TV. I could do that at home.
Somebody said their dream seat would be the back seat of the Blue Angels.
No. I went up with them years ago.
You'd need three pairs of underwear if you went that thing.
I'm going to tell you something, man. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. They went up, nice, casual ride up. They jumped out, then that thing nosedived back down. The G-forces on that were, not good.
From the 816, dream seat would be at a Pittsburgh Pirates game sitting next to Libby Dunn.
Yeah, that's a good call. I like that. You could take the day off.
It would be kind of cool to be in that suite with, like, Taylor and Brittany to see how rowdy those ladies go during like a Chiefs playoff
game.
That
would be fun. Cool, yeah, sit with Taylor would be outstanding.
I would love that.
Taylor, pop that ace of spades. Why do you keep asking? It's not even the halftime yet. Just keep going.
Oh, it'd be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Oh, that'd be great. Lawn chair on the 50-yard line at Arrowhead, roped off so I have my bubble.
All right, nobody can get near me, including Andy Reid, including the players. Could you imagine if they had like the fan of the game and that guy just sat in a lawn chair on the 50-yard line? That would be so cool.
Force field around him.
Yeah. He's got like a little like COVID Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, like a COVID dummy just sitting there.
There's John in his spot.
My luck, I'd get like there'd be an out of bounds pass, and I'd just get plummeted in the bowl. The bubble would just be rolling.
Somebody would get destroyed on that sideline. It'd be like outstanding.
Look like one of those hamsters that gets loose.
What do you think they could charge for that seat? Honest to God, what would people pay to sit in that seat? Is $100,000 too much?
I mean, somebody pay.
Someone would pay that. You'd get somebody for every single game in the NFL to scratch a check for $100,000 to sit down there by themselves.
Yeah,
but you're in the middle of everything. You're literally on the sideline. Andy Reid can't even get close to you. You're on the 50 in a bubble. Would you pay $100,000?
Can you wear Andy Reid's COVID face shield?
Yes.
Also, is it, you know what would be really cool is if, like, is it snowing and you're just sitting there in shorts in your own heat? And you're like, it's everybody cold. And, like,
you
just,
yeah, like, it's like a climate control tent.
Like a nude snow globe.
Yeah, I love that idea. There would be somebody that would write that check every single game in every single stadium and not even hesitate.
No doubt. No doubt. I guess we can end our show on this one. This is somebody's dream seat. I would sit in the crown seats when the stadium is 119th and all.
There you go. Well played.
Ben Maller.
Have that soon.
Ben Maller in 20 minutes, but coming up, competitive divisions, one in baseball, one in football, and they both involve your local teams. We explain here next on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.